chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Phil Johnson on the show today. Phil is the founder and CEO at Master of Business Leadership, Inc., an executive coach, and the author of several business books. Well, Phil, welcome to the Something Extra Podcast. I'm so delighted that you made the time to join me today.
Oh, thanks, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I always love to go back, and you actually reached out to me via LinkedIn and said, hey, I'm a fan of your show and would love to talk to you about being on the show, and the rest is history. But what I did realize, though, Phil, no telling how many connections you and I have in common. I don't know if you know this, but I'm connected to Darren Tully. Darren Tully has been on the show. You're connected. John O'Leary here in St. Louis, who's a motivational speaker, is a friend and has been on the show. And so we've got hundreds probably of connections in common.
Oh, that's great. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. So it only stands to reason that you and I need to know one another. But yeah, but we've got a lot to talk about. I've got pages and pages of notes. So, you know, yeah, you're the founder and CEO of Master Business Leadership Programs. You've been seen on MarketWatch, CBS, Fox, alumni, and you know, you've got alumni from your program in the United States, Canada, UK, Europe, Japan, Germany, Africa, Australia. I mean, all over the world, you've got alumni that have been part of your program, Phil. So I cannot wait to dig in more, but I know that, you know, you've got a very interesting story growing up. So I'd love for you to just kind of take me back and tell me about growing up and tell me about your parents. And then we'll get into some other things, because I think you had some life events that really kind of probably set you on the trajectory that you're on today.
So I'm in my 70th year, and I had the good fortune of being born with dyslexia. And back in those days, there was no such thing as dyslexia or ADD or ADHD. And it forced me to do a lot of what I now refer to as emotional labor. It forced me out of my comfort zone from a very early age. And it helped to prepare me for the work that I've been doing for the last 31 years. It's been quite a journey, and I'm very grateful to be able to do what I do.
Yeah. Well, you were born in Brantford, Ontario, right? In Canada. I think you're the youngest of three, and you were kind of, I believe, Phil, you were a bonus baby.
I was a surprise. And I was, my mother was in her early 40s when I was born. My parents were born in 1908 and 1909. I actually spent my first 6 months in an incubator at the local Brantford General Hospital. And It was a very different time, and in a lot of respects, it was very challenging. But it's all we knew. So I actually started working when I was 9 years old, pulling copper out of the back of dumpsters and selling it for 5 cents a pound. Because of my dyslexia, I failed grade three and I failed grade five and was labeled a slow learner. And my mother actually died of breast cancer in December of 1967. And in January of 1968, I decided I wanted to do this work. And I kind of became a super overachiever. I did very well in university, went on to study electrical engineering, and spent 20 years as an executive in the semiconductor industry, traveling about 60,000 miles per year throughout North America and the Pacific Rim. So by 1990, I had all the toys. I'd accomplished more than I or anyone else ever thought I would. But I didn't feel, I felt there was something, a lot missing actually. And I remembered the promise I'd made to myself in January of 1968 after my mother's death, that I was going to see what was on the other side of the hill and come back and help my friends that had already given up on life. So I turned down a couple of vice presidential roles to start what became the Master of Business Leadership program. And I've been working with executives and organizations all over the world since then to help them succeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, I remember reading that, Phil, about you, that after your mom died and with the dyslexia, you took your, I think you had a dog named Duke.
That's correct.
And you were on a walk with Duke and something shifted in you. And you said, you know what? I'm going to go back and I'm going to learn what's on the other side and I'm going to come back and help others.
You know, Lisa, I can remember exactly where I was and exactly what I was feeling, just like it was happening right now. It was the turning point in my life. And I'm extremely grateful for that. So yeah, it was the pivotal point in my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm grateful for that too, because I know that you've helped so many, you've helped so many, Phil. So, so tell me, yeah, you're the founder of Master Business Leadership. Tell me a little bit about that. What is it? What are the key components? Because I've read about you a little bit, and you really coach on human skills. And this would be inspirational leadership, emotional intelligence, higher consciousness, freedom from ego-based fears, trust, engagement, success. But tell me about Master Business Leadership and just if you dig in there a little bit.
Sure. It's a phenomenal process that is the root cause solution to the root cause problem that we're all facing. Now, that sounds like a mouthful, but we're facing, in many respects, we're at a tipping point as a species. We're facing a tsunami of rapidly accelerating global change with a 500 million year old brain that doesn't like change. So change is increasing at an exponential rate, and we don't like change. Doesn't matter whether the change is good change or bad change, we resist change. So it's become essential for us to develop the human skills of learning to feel the fear and anxiety that change triggers in us and be able to move through it so we can turn the challenges we're facing into opportunities for better results. And as easy as that might sound to explain, I can tell you that it's extremely difficult. It's like Navy SEAL training for your emotions. So I work with executives and organizations that have the motivation to do the work, to do the emotional labor that change and innovation, that change requires.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. It's the emotional labor. Because, you know, if we're trying to train our bodies and we're trying to get better and healthier physically, right, Phil? I mean, that's a physical labor. You know, you got to lift the weights. You've got to do the work, right? But the same thing applies if we are wanting to grow in our emotional intelligence. And so, you know, yeah, go ahead. Did you have something else?
You're right. There was a 40-year study done at UC Berkeley comparing intellectual intelligence with emotional intelligence. And they concluded that emotional intelligence was 400% more valuable in determining success than intellectual intelligence. And I actually think it's much higher than that. But as an analogy, if you think of IQ as somebody giving you $10,000 a day for 31 days, at the end of 31 days, you've got $310,000. Think of emotional intelligence as a penny that doubles in value. So day one, you have a penny. Day two, you have 2 pennies. Day 31, you've got $10.7 million. Day 40, you've got over $5 billion. Day 50, you've got over $5 trillion. So not everybody can have 160 IQ. If you have a high IQ, your parents had a high IQ, their parents had a high IQ, and you simply inherited those genes, but you didn't do anything to develop that ability. You were born with it. Mm-hmm. But everybody can develop their emotional intelligence, and the ROI is massively greater than intellectual intelligence. So in a lot of respects, our educational system and our employment system have failed to prepare us for the future we're facing. As an example, Einstein had a an IQ of around 160, and within the next 2 to 3 years, AI will have an IQ of over 1,000. So using intellect as kind of like your get out of jail card for success will no longer work. So the real focus in this century is the development of relationships, is the connectedness we need to deal with a lot of the global challenges we're facing. And that really, those are really human skills that we all need to be developing. And that's what the MBL program does.
That is so good. I absolutely love what you just said. You know, the IQ is going to only get you so far. I mean, it's not going to get you from here to there. You know, it may get you in the room, but you know, it won't keep you there. I mean, having that emotional intelligence. And I love also what you said, Phil, that it's not fixed. You know, it's not fixed. It's something we can grow in, which should give people hope.
Yeah, it's actually, I'm actually I've begun tracking the ROI for folks that have that are going through or have gone through this program, and the ROI is massive. Let me give you an example of a company that's currently valued at over $3 trillion, and they're doing about $600 billion a year in revenue, and their primary hiring focus is emotional intelligence. That company is Apple. And that's why when you walk into an Apple store, the energy you feel is an example of a more emotionally intelligent environment. They're not trying to sell you anything. They're trying to understand your pain and, if possible, offer a solution to your pain. Whether you buy anything or not is secondary to their desire to want to serve you. They want you to have a great experience, and maybe you'll tell your friends and they'll tell their friends. And if you think about it, the way you feel in that environment, the energy in that environment is a very different energy from the energy coming out of the stores surrounding that environment. So that because of the accelerating rate of global change, more and more companies, individuals are developing their emotional intelligence. Let me explain why that is, if you don't mind.
Sure, I would love for you to.
There's three primary sources of resistance we have to change. Two are biological and one sociological, but let me just talk about one of them. Every time we take an action that moves us outside of our comfort zone, there's a part of our old lizard brain that has been trying to keep us safe and alive for the last 500 million years by making sure we never leave the security of our cave. And if we do, it automatically triggers the release of a hormone into our bloodstream called cortisol. And that causes the executive center of our brain, our prefrontal cortex, to shut off. And we go into what psychologists refer to as an amygdala hijack. Some people lash out. Some people run away. Some people freeze like a deer in the headlights. When that happens in conflict situations, people die. When it happens in business or personal situations, relationships die. We burn trust. So as an analogy, if you think of your amygdala as a very frightened four-year-old child, the development of our emotional intelligence acts like a big brother or a big sister to quiet the amygdala response down and better enable us to feel the fear and anxiety that change and innovation always triggers in us and be able to acknowledge and move through it towards what it is we're trying to achieve, as opposed to allowing that fear to keep us trapped in our comfort zones.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. That is good. Well, you know, let's go back, because you had mentioned Apple, and I know that they are looking, you know, in their vetting and in their screening process for the people that they bring on board, Phil, they are looking for people that are more emotionally intelligent. So my next question to you is, how are they doing that? I mean, and I know, because I've read enough to know that they are big on asking questions, you know, of the people.
The short answer to your question, and it's a great question, is the more emotionally intelligent you are, the easier it is to spot it in other people. This gets into the central thesis of my work, and it's energy physics. And if you'd like, I can spend 3 minutes and explain that to you, if that's of interest.
Absolutely. Go there. And I've got a lot of other questions. So I tell you what, let's talk about this. Let's talk about energy physics, and then we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back. And I've got a lot to dig into, because I know you've written multiple books, and I want to kind of jump into some of those as well.
So we're only actually conscious about 3 to 5% of the time. The rest of the time, we're relying on our unconscious habits to determine the bulk of our behavior and our results. And that's fine, because our unconscious mind is stronger, faster, and takes less of our metabolic energy than our conscious mind. Our conscious mind has an important role, but it's really our unconscious mind that's really running the show. But when we're born, we're not born with a conscious mind. We are born with an unconscious mind. We don't start to become conscious until we're about a year or so old. But we immediately start wiring up our brain, creating the neural network pathways that become our habits in order to survive. And a lot of those habits unconsciously cause us to give away our energy. And we do it in lots of different ways: how we communicate, listen, take responsibility, make decisions, all sorts of ways. But when we're giving away our energy, it creates an energy deficit in us. So at the same time we're giving away our energy over here, we have to be looking to try and replace that energy by trying to steal energy over here. And that dynamic is going on inside of everybody, everywhere, all over the world, all the time. And that is the root cause of all drama, chaos, and conflict. So what I do in the MBL program is I show people how they're unconsciously giving away their energy, and I give them better habits to practice to stop doing that. And when they stop giving away their energy, their need to steal the energy of other people goes away, because they don't need it. And it's in that process that they become more inspirational leaders. They develop their emotional intelligence. They become more conscious of what's going on in them and around them, which helps to free them from their ego-based fears, which leads to higher levels of trust and engagement, which guarantees career, corporate, and personal success. So the point of this is that the root cause and solution to everything is energy physics.
Makes sense. It totally
if you want, I could give you some examples after the break.
Absolutely. Well, let's do take a quick break, Phil, and then we'll be right back with Phil Johnson on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch-up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to Something Extra podcast with Phil Johnson. And we have been having a fascinating conversation around energy physics. And Phil, you said that you could give us a few examples of that. And please do, because I think that will really help us with our understanding of what you're talking about.
Sure. So here's an example. It's actually one of the habits in the MBL program called authentic listening. And the key to authentic listening is not to take anything personally. How somebody feels about you, whether they like you or whether they don't, has nothing to do with you. It has to do with what's going on inside of the other person. But if how you feel about yourself is based on how somebody else feels about you, who's running your life? You or them? Well, that's them, right? Mm-hmm. And as crazy as that sounds, what I've just described is all of social media. We bend over backwards trying to get people to like us so we can feel better about ourselves. But when we're doing that, when we're unconsciously giving away our energy to other people to determine how we should feel about ourselves, that's creating an energy deficit in us. At the same time we're giving away our energy, we're simultaneously trying to steal energy from other people to make up for the energy we're giving away. So both of those things occur at the same time. So whenever we're giving away our energy, whenever we're raising our walls and becoming resistive, judgmental, or attached to outcome, it doesn't end there, because simultaneously we're unconsciously trying to steal energy from others. And that's the root cause of all the drama, chaos, and conflict we see. The current level of employee engagement worldwide, according to Gallup, for example, is around 13%. Low levels of employee engagement are costing the U.S. economy alone over $1 trillion a year. So the toxicity we see in organizations is directly related to energy physics.
So I was going to ask you about that in employee engagement, because every leader, this is top of mind for them, is how do we get our employees more engaged? And you even say, you know, as the employee engagement goes, so goes the customer engagement, right? Yep. Phil, so there's a domino effect there, because it's your people that are interfacing with your clients. Mm-hmm. And if the energy is not there the way, the positive emotional intelligence is not there the way it should be in your organization, then your customer engagement is going to suffer as well. But what do you believe, because I know you've studied this, Phil, what do you believe really causes the disengagement of employees? I mean, why do you think it's so low now? What's your opinion?
Ego-based fear. Ego-based fear. See, our egos cause us to give away our energy. Our ego doesn't want us, our ego never wants us to be in the present moment. Our ego wants us to feel superior or inferior. It doesn't care which. But it's always looking to compare itself with the other. And that is the source of why we give away our energy. So we're always.
So how can we keep our egos in check? Because I love what you said, you know, yep. That and I've often said comparison is the tool of the devil, you know, compare, yeah. You know, we don't need to compare. Just don't, exactly. Don't try to be better than someone else. Don't compare yourself. You just be the best you can be, because you were created uniquely, and that's what we need to do. But how in your, you know, in the studies, I mean, how, I'm sure you've seen leaders that are pretty good at this, keeping their egos in check and not even worrying, you know, keeping their egos there so that they're not like going, I either am superior or inferior to this individual, you know, that I'm comparing myself to.
The way you do that is you learn to stop giving away your energy. when you learn to stop giving away your energy, it pulls you into the present moment, and it creates a distance between your ego and who you really are. See, you're really not your ego. You become the observer of your ego. You're never going to change your ego. But a lot of people identify with their egos, identify with their cars, they identify with their titles, they identify with their income. That's who they think they are.
Yes.
By learning to stop giving away your energy, you start to create a separation from your ego. You start to become the observer of your ego, and that distance creates freedom from your ego-based fears.
That's fascinating. That's fascinating.
Works 100% of the time.
100% of the time?
As you go through the process of distancing yourself from your ego by learning to stop giving away your energy, it creates the freedom. It creates the awareness. You know, you were asking earlier, how do people recognize other emotionally intelligent people or people that aren't emotionally intelligent? Well, it's the freedom that's created by distancing yourself from your ego. It enables you to see who you really are. And when you lower your walls, it reconnects you with who you really are, and it enables you to see other people for who they really are. As a matter of fact, you're able to see other people better than they're able to see themselves, because their egos blind them to the reality of the present moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is good. Fascinating. Well, you know, I wanted to talk to you about this, Phil, because you've written several books, authored several books. Our listeners can go, we'll put those in the show notes, but Master of Business Leadership, Insights and Tips, A New Economic Currency, MBL Success Map, and The Servant Warrior Leader. And the subtitle for that, which I really loved, was Mastering Authentic Business Leadership. So I wanted to ask you, tell me a little bit about this book. I know you've helped hundreds of Fortune 500 companies and larger corporate clients, but I think this book, if I'm not mistaken, really offers a plan for businesses of all sizes, even startups.
I wrote that book in, was first published in 2007, 2006. And I really wrote the book for me. So it highlights, see, we've grown up in a model that views power as external, and it's not, it's internal. So from childhood, we've been incentivized to look for our answers out there. We've been told that we're not enough. We need to be bigger, smarter, faster, richer, taller, prettier. And that when we get to that level, that will complete us.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, all of our answers are right under our nose. They're in here. They're not out there. So there's a battle going on, but it's an internal battle. The servant warrior leader is a battle within the individual to learn to lower their walls and stop giving in to their ego-based fears. That's the battleground. It's not, the battleground is not out there. The battleground is in here inside of us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, our whole world rewards the win-lose model, reflects the win-lose model. Sports, school, government, business. Everything.
Yes.
Everything. It's saying, hey, in order for me to win, you have to lose. It's just the way it is. And that is incorrect. That is incorrect. As a matter of fact, that's the central challenge we have as a species in this century, because the challenges we're facing in this century, AI, climate change, CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology, other pandemics, they're not regional challenges. They're global challenges that require global solutions, that require us to lower our walls and distance ourselves from our egos so that we can reconnect with ourselves and each other. That is the only way we're going to survive this century. And quite frankly, humanity has only been on the planet in relative terms for about 1.5 seconds. And in that time, we've destroyed the climate. There isn't a single other species on the planet that wouldn't be better off if humanity didn't exist. We're the virus on the planet. And the way we've been living is simply not sustainable. We have to make a dramatic change in how we live. And if we don't, I think we're going to have a lot of difficulty surviving this century.
Yeah, well, I couldn't agree more with you. You know, to solve these challenges, we definitely need to come together, you know, and not have the walls and the division and the, you know, that we see so many times.
We used to have that a long time ago. Mm-hmm. See, with the development of our prefrontal cortex is when we started to learn to think, that's when our ego was created. That's when we learned to separate ourselves from each other. But we've gone way overboard on it. And now we've lost that connectedness that we had a long time ago, and we need to get it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Well, I wanted to ask you, like on this particular book, you know, we've already talked about why it's important. It's important so that we will survive, right? But emotional intelligence in the servant warrior leadership. I mean, let's spend just a minute on this, a minute or two on this, because I think this will really help our listeners feel, you know, what are the ways besides, you know, and I do want our listeners to go check this out. I'm just going to tell you a few. I did go and look at some of the recommendations and the testimonials on Master Business Leadership. Getting your MBL is the best investment you could ever make. That's what one person said. Applying the MBL principles has changed my life, both professionally and personally. Master of Business Leadership program has contributed remarkably to revenue growth and career advancement in our organization. Master of Business Leadership program is invaluable in helping achieve personal and corporate success. The results have been amazing. You know, and those are just a few of the testimonials. So I do want our listeners to go and check these out. But, you know, if someone, let's talk tactically a little bit. Maybe you can give our listeners just a few things. How can a leader increase their emotional intelligence? And I do have another question for you, Phil, because I was thinking about this in relation to employee engagement. You know, we've already talked about Apple is a very emotionally intelligent organization. Do you think that as we become more emotionally intelligent as individuals, our organization will become more emotionally intelligent and thereby our employee engagement numbers should go up then at that point, right? Because we're going to have less conflict and less chaos in the organization. What do you think about it? I know this is a loaded question.
No, that's you're absolutely correct. You can't have organizational change without individual change first. And actually, there's a methodology for individual change, and there's a separate methodology for organizational change, but individual change has to occur first. So as more and more people within the organization, let me take a sidetrack here for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
People that give away our energy, I call them victims. A victim can't exist in isolation. Victims travel in packs. They have a codependent relationship with each other, but they don't like each other. They don't trust each other, and they can never lower their walls around each other, but they need each other. So the more emotionally intelligent people that come into the are developed within the organization, think of an organization as a big pool of energy. As you increase the amount of people that are emotionally intelligent, you're reducing the drama, chaos, and conflict that the victims feed off of. They're like energy vampires. They have to have that drama, chaos, and conflict so they can feed off of the energy that creates. But as you reduce that drama, chaos, and conflict, you're actually forcing people to either lower their walls and become more authentic, stop giving away their energy, or you force them out of the organization to go and work in a more chaotic organization. So that by developing the leadership and emotional intelligence, by giving them these habits to stop giving away their energy, the organization can self-heal, can heal itself from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. The way you describe it, I'm like, we all need to pay attention to that. You know, we need to make that a priority.
Well, I'm actually doing that with a couple of startups. I'm doing that with a couple of startups right now, and I'm actually doing it with a very large global organization. And I can tell you that it's exponentially harder the larger the organization is to create this change. It's much, I wouldn't say it easier, but it's, you can get there a lot faster if you start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a word of wisdom to startups.
Yeah.
Make sure you're starting on the right foot, because it's difficult. The older the organization, the larger the organization, you know, gets steeped in, you know, ideas and paradigms and, you know, for sure. But okay, I'm going to ask you a couple rapid fire questions, and then we'll talk about something extra, and that will be our show for today. But rapid fire questions. What are you reading right now, and what are you learning from it, Phil?
Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth. I love Eckhart Tolle. What he talks about in his videos and in his books and in his discussions is exactly what the MBL program creates. So definitely Eckhart Tolle.
Great. What do you do for fun? And I guess the next question I have is fun important? I just bought a book. Her name's Chrissy Harold, and she has a book out saying why play in your organization will help your culture. But what do you do for fun? Phil,
everything I do is fun. I don't mean that to be, I love what I do. I don't do things that aren't fun.
Yeah, that's great.
Or I delegate them to people that that have more fun doing it than I do.
Right.
So for instance, I haven't done my taxes in probably 20 years, but the company that does that for me loves doing that.
Yes.
That's their
passion.
They're
good at it. I'm sure they're good at it. It's
their
passion.
They're very good at it.
Yes, very good. What's the best advice you've ever received?
To thine own self be true.
Oh,
it actually came from my dad.
Oh, I love that. I love that. What are you most excited about right now?
Talking with you.
Great answer.
I'm really honored to be talking with you, and I really appreciate the time you're making.
You have great emotional intelligence, Phil. I love that answer. Well, Phil, this is called Something Extra. It's the common thread through every episode, and I have to ask you, I think I know what you're going to say, but what is the something extra that every leader needs?
The thing that all inspirational leaders have in common is they have an emotional connection to a desired result that's stronger than their fear. And that emotional connection to the vision of their desired result is what powers them forward through all of the challenges they face.
That is a very good answer. I like that a lot. Yeah. And, you know, having that emotional connection, because you do have to be powered forward, because you will have challenges. There's challenges every day, right? So, yeah, great answer, Phil. Well, hey, this has been so much fun for me. Thank you so much for making the time. And I've had a great time too. Yeah. Most fun that you've had.
Thanks, Lisa. I really appreciate it.
Take care.
You too.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.